Hey, everybody. This is Merrick from Cadre Journal. I'm here with the All Marxist Leninist Union based out of Rutgers University. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves a little bit?
Yeah, no, of course. So I'm Oscar. I am the general secretary of the All Marxist Leninist Union. We're based in Rutgers, specifically Rutgers, New Brunswick, since Rutgers is a three-campus university. And well, I've been here since fall of 2021, so, you know, just as quarantine was ending. And well, we'll get in more into this in the interview, but I mean, the landscape of communist organizing at college campuses has certainly changed drastically since COVID.
I'm Luke, him. I guess I'm going to be the media secretary. At the moment, we're kind of we've been reorganizing since COVID. I mean, I only joined the club like a year ago, and we started off as like more of like a book club. I mean, it was fun. Like, we read Pedagogy of the Oppressed by Fieri, which is a good one. Good in-depth discussions, but, you know, now, of course, we want to move more towards praxis. And in that kind of movement, we're starting to kind of build like a committee structure. So, you know, again, like we're slowly like molding the club into like leadership positions. But even then, I would say we're pretty non-hierarchical.
Hello, I'm Julian. I'm just like a general member. I've been part of AMLU for like 2 years now. Kind of joined in with Oscar. I also do some other organizing in the area with the Hope City Socialists, do a little bit of stuff with Central New Jersey DSA, and just like, I'm just kind of involved in the area and the organizing that takes place.
Well, it's really great to have you guys all here. I'm glad we could like,
thank you for having us,
find some time over this winter break. I know we're all trying to like take a little time off for school before we get back into it. So just, you know, going off with the questions, could you give us, I know you guys talked a little bit about it, but could you give us some more background on AMLU, as Julian said? So yeah, give us a little bit more background and also like some of the ideological bases you guys feel are kind of part, or even just maybe some of the different line struggles that you guys have within your own group. I know you guys talk about Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which was really cool. So, you know, you can kind of go into any of that stuff.
Yeah, no, of course. So the All Marxist Leninist Union is actually a pretty young organization. This was long before any of us were members. It was established in the fall of 2014. And much like it was, you know, when I joined back then, the purpose of the group was more so meant to be, you know, for education, for awareness, and for some activism here and there, because there really wasn't much of a presence for communist organizing at Rutgers. I think the funny thing is, actually, so we're explicitly a Marxist-Leninist organization, at least in name, but it was the Solstice Alternative. Some of the members from that group broke off, and they were the ones who founded our group. So a bit ironic now, considering our situation on campus with the Trotskyists, but that's besides the point. And I think not too long after that, we soon became the youth wing of the American Party of Labor. That doesn't really reflect line struggle within the org too much, because, yeah, let's say maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 2017, that the org was very much dominated by that APL Hoxhist line. But I mean, yeah, now we, I mean, it still is a mostly Marxist group, but we do have, you know, members with different tendencies, and you know, we're all working together, but at the same time, you know, we're all, you know, sort of trying to, I guess, in some sort of way, fight for our own lines, and, you know, trying to prove our lines. And of course, you do that through struggle, you do that through practice. After the pandemic, the group started to come apart a little bit. We became a little inactive. It was only, you know, in the fall, after in-person classes at Rutgers began to resume, fall 2021. Yeah, that's when that was, when that's when Julian and I came through. Yeah, that's when things really started to pick up. And so, yeah, but I mean, at the, you know, in the very beginning, though, just to sum it up, it wasn't really more so a matter of like building this kind of political organization, but rather just to get common-minded people together and like to educate people about, you know, about Marxism-Leninism, about the USSR, about actual existing socialism.
Yeah, to hop off of Oscar's point, we definitely have different tendencies, which I like, but at the same time, I do see everybody in mutual agreement, straying away from reformism. And, you know, it is hard to be, I mean, just for any a revolutionary org, but you can at least start by holding the principles, you know, and therefore you put the radical principles into practice, praxis. We, you know, we learned that through pedagogy. But, you know, we do have these different tendencies, but over the course of restructuring, like right now we're reworking the Constitution and, you know, kind of like looking at different orgs, whether it be, you know, the Black Panthers 10 points or anti-racist actions, points of unity, trying to, you know, collectively agree on, you know, a set of general, you know, radical politics. I mean, we're all, you know, like anti-state, of course, we're all for a classless, stateless society, you know, seizing the means of production, however, you know, you want to call it, and put it into Marxist terms. And really at this point, it's just a matter, I feel like, of putting the kind of ideological foundations, you know, into action.
Awesome. It's really, I mean, I found that really interesting. And Oscar talking about like the Trotskyists, and just kind of the history of this, because I mean, you say it's young, but I think in terms of like some other like university situations, a lot of these, you know, clubs, groups, movements peter out after 4 years, you know, after, you know, whoever starts it kind of gets it going, like maybe one or two generations more, and it really fails. And especially after COVID, a lot of these, you know, things have fallen apart. I know like there used to be an SJP at FIU and now it's no longer here. And that's partly because of COVID. So honestly, I think it's very commendable that you guys have been able to last as long as you have, even though, you know, 2014 doesn't seem that long ago, like in terms of college, you know, in that 4-year structure and, you know, limited time structure, it's a very like good recognizable characteristic of your guys's group. And with that being said, kind of expanding on like the Trotskyists, which was such an interesting thing to point out as well, what is kind of like how would you say the overall like political landscape in at, you know, New Brunswick is, like Rutgers, New Brunswick is, and just like the people you interact with, like any interesting or like interesting things you've heard from professors or just like, you know, the student community at large?
Yeah, there's some interesting currents in the New Brunswick scene right now, I would say. In terms of like organizing with other student organizations, of course, we have like SJP, we have Rutgers One, which is like a student coalition of like these progressive organizations that we're a part of. So we're really just like trying to work in tandem with these other organizations.
Also Anak Bayan.
Is another important, more radical element in like the student movement. But I would say also just general politics in New Brunswick right now, like, it is very neoliberal. It is very, you know, the radical elements are kind of in the minority still. However, you know, like we're seeing like definitely some more radical action being taken on campus. And I'm sure Oscar, you can go into this too. We have the adjunct faculty at Rutgers are striking, and like the faculty, the graduate students are going to join them in solidarity. So that's in a development, and Oscar actually works closely with the adjuncts in that regard. But other than that, I mean, like, you know, like I said, very neoliberal. Rutgers is, you know, working with Tel Aviv University, which is an Israeli like institution. Yeah, it's like something like $665 million project in New Brunswick that's going on. Meanwhile, we have like people on the streets, you know, not being able to have shelter. Me and Luke are involved with like Code Blue, like organizing, which is basically like New Brunswick, once it gets to a certain temperature, they have to let the houseless people into these shelters. And some of these conditions are awful. So, you know, while Tel Aviv is doing their collaboration with Rutgers and getting a crazy amount of money to build this thing, you know, we have people on the streets that are, don't even have a shelter. And also just like, I guess the New Brunswick context is important to have because Rutgers does have an impact on the surrounding infrastructure, you know, like as like a university, they're one of the biggest landlords in the area. Like, and you know, right now we also have a terrible housing crisis in New Brunswick. You know, I think rents have like skyrocketed. The earliest report I saw was like 36% increase in rents.
Yeah, it's alongside, there was a Pix 11 article I read, I think around this time last year, actually. And we're basically on the same pace of like Newark, Jersey City, I think it was Austin, Texas, like countrywide, like we're one of the highest raising like rents.
Yeah. So like all the, and you know, we have what, like a third of people are like living in New Brunswick are currently living at or below the poverty line. So it's just crazy. And like the university is definitely involved in that process of like displacement, you know, working with Tel Aviv, you know, which as we know, Israel is an apartheid state. So it's not just working about with student organizations, but also just like seeing locally what's going on and organizing with those other organizations. Like I mentioned DSA, I mentioned Hope City Socialists. Those are not really student organizations, but our members do work closely with them in the community. Actually today I have to run and like hop to a city council meeting.
No, that's tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, you're good though. You're good.
Cool.
Yeah, they're on Wednesdays.
Yeah, no, there's a lot happening in New Brunswick, and it's been interesting to see like all these organizations, you know, working together and developing side by side, and hopefully we can get to building something that's substantial.
Yeah, I think I should also clarify because Julian, you mentioned the faculty union and the strike, so. I mean, as things are right now, they are on pace to strike, but they still have to authorize it and vote on it. So that'll probably be in the spring, probably around March before our spring break. And then after that, you know, if things get to that point, because keep in mind that this would be Rutgers' first strike ever in its 250-year plus history as university. And I believe there was almost a strike, in 2019, 2020, but then at that point, that pandemic came around, and I mean, that brought a halt to pretty much everything, really. So I feel it's a matter of if the faculty don't get cold feet, which I personally don't see happening, but I could be wrong, and also, you know, of the university holding out, which they probably will. They probably won't give the faculty, you know, their contract demands. I'd also like to add, I guess this is more on the student side of things, because there is a lot of poverty in New Brunswick, like the city proper. And there is a lot of, you know, revolutionary potential because of that. However, at least at the university level, because it is like a very much, I wouldn't say it's gated, because that would be a big cliche, but it is like this very much this bubble, you know, like Rutgers, it's almost its sort of own world away from the rest of New Brunswick. And you know, a lot of students don't realize it. I mean, they often make fun of it as well. Like we get these crime alerts like every like day or so of like some crime that's occurred in New Brunswick, and we just joke about it because that's the point that we've gotten to, you know, as university students. And ideologically as well, I would say that you know, communist organizing, specifically, you know, Marxism organizing, because that is the analysis that we should be grounding all our organizing in, you know, it definitely has a long way to go in terms of, you know, of really asserting its presence and, you know, becoming a driving force for a revolutionary change at Rutgers, because a lot of the organizations at Rutgers right now, you know, they are openly and I'd say even proudly intersectional. And I mean, of course, like I have nothing against identity politics. You know, we're all, you know, we all have our own experiences with the world, with capitalism and, you know, and with imperialism as well. But, you know, it's not really something, because then at that point, you know, you're just viewing the world as like, oh, like we have our own oppressors, but like that's not the case. There's one oppressor, and more specifically, you know, it's the ruling class. If we don't base our struggle in that sort of class analysis, then we're not going to get anywhere. And so that's something we're also going to have to overcome. But I do definitely believe that students are sympathetic, or at least like a good number of them. And there definitely are more communists at Rutgers, specifically since, you know, New Jersey is generally a liberal state, right? But, you know, so liberals, generally speaking, can be swayed. It's just a matter of, you know, actually being aggressive, agitating, you know, and putting ourselves out there.
So New Brunswick has, I mean, just like all New Jersey, you know, large, you know, cities and whatnot, has always been extremely just bad, you know, for the working class. You know, you have a bunch of landlords, slumlords, you know, my mother lived in New Brunswick, you know, when she was a kid, and, you know, they would have cockroaches in their apartment. And that wasn't even, that was like up by George Street, which is like now, you know, the kind of like commercial, you know, shopping kind of district where you have all your restaurants. But yeah, so what do you call it? I mean, we've always had just bad conditions, and just, you know, as time has increased, they only have gone worse. Julian mentioned, you know, the Tel Aviv contract, which is already on stolen land. You know, we're on stolen Lenni Lenape land, and, you know, land of the Raritan Lenape. You know, Dutch settlers came. I know one of my professors who I took last semester, who is indigenous himself, you know, they're recognizing and looking into a massacre, you know, and researching more about that, you know, centuries ago. So we're already on stolen land, and for Rutgers to collaborate with Tel Aviv University, who is also, you know, Israel is an apartheid state, but it's also a settler colonial state, just like us. And I think we have to materially recognize that in order to understand the class dimensions, but also the kind of relations to a material basis that also kind of aid in racism and, you know, all of those kind of structures, and analyzing it in that sense away from more just kind of liberal surface identity politics. Of course, we have, you know, a tremendous houseless population. The city does nothing about it. Rutgers, you know, continuously aids in it. I always joke about, you know, we literally have a street renamed Paul Robeson Street, you know, the communist revolutionary, who was the, I think, third African-American at Rutgers. And what do you call it? You know, vehement communist. He visited, you know, Russia and the Soviet Union at the time. And, you know, he famously proclaimed that's where he felt human for once. What do you call it? You know, anti-imperialist, anti-Korean War, all of that. And, you know, on the corner up by the Raritan, like, there's literally always like panhandlers there. Like, it's a total disgrace, you know, to a revolutionary's legacy like that. And that's kind of, you know, the, I guess just like, just again, like liberal kind of whitewashing of history and all of that, that Rutgers participates in. You know, it claims to be a revolutionary school, but in reality, it kind of identifies more, you know, with the 76 settler, you know, revolution. In terms of radical politics, we've always had, you know, a sort of radical identity. I mean, working with Hope City, I've briefly met Sharmell Davis, whose father was a Black Panther. And they had to, you know, at that time, they had to run underground just because of how, you know, oppressive the state and the police were at that time. You know, Assata Shakur, who, you know, infamously was shot and detained on the New Jersey Turnpike for being a part of the Black Panthers and the Black Liberation Army. She was locked in solitary confinement under the Middlesex County Jail, which is like a little bit, you know, maybe like 8 miles down south from, you know, New Brunswick, the city. You know, the lawyers, you know, recognized and they all joined together. And by the way, she was in solitary in a men's prison too. She was the only one who was locked in a men's prison like that. And then Angela Davis, you know, held rallies at City Hall alongside, you know, other revolutionaries calling for her release. I know Anti-Racist Action New Jersey, their kind of mainstay was based in New Brunswick as well, you know, more like into the 80s and the 90s. And to current day, we still have that kind of, you know, revolutionary momentum for sure. I mean, like, we work with Hope City, you know, which is a great org. Student Justice for Palestine, you know, is a great org. Same with Anak Bayan. And really, I feel like with the upcoming strike, because frankly, it's going to happen. They've already been building up a strike fund. The university has basically been, you know, shooing down their demands, or, you know, just trying to like give them as little as possible, because the university honestly thinks that they can probably win. But I don't know. I don't know how that's going to happen. I mean, of course, that's only for the future behold. But I think our current mission, really, with the union, which we've been working alongside, as well as just a strike, is to make it as radical as possible. I know, you know, on the UC campuses, they had an amazing start, and they did amazing work. I know UC Davis Cops Off Campus, they did a really good campaign of, you know, doing anti-police work, which, you know, we hopefully will try and follow in their footsteps, because we have to recognize, you know, that police are going to try to, you know, they're going to side, you know, on Rutgers because they protect Capitol. They don't protect us. So, you know, we need to do anti-police work. And also, too, that's with their union, unfortunately, they kind of caved in to a lot of those, you know, kind of ideas of like being more radical, and instead, you know, just asking and kind of agreeing on, you know, like wage increases and job security, which, you know, that's good. Like, we need that. But at the same time, we need to recognize Rutgers, you know, on stolen land, engaging in, you know, apartheid and settler colonialism across the sea, and really like dismantle all of those forms of oppression and whatnot that it engages in.
Yeah. Wow. That was, I mean, I feel like I got a history lesson on like revolution.
I'm a history student. So.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Cause I mean, I really did not know about a lot of those things. The Robinson thing is really cool. The Shakur thing is very interesting. I think I remember it was in New Jersey, but I didn't know that much about it, honestly. It's cool that you're also mentioning like what other universities are doing, what other people are doing, obviously. That stuff is like kind of one of the reasons we want to talk to you guys, is because, you know, there's so much we can learn from, you know, looking towards each other. You know, like a lot of times we read books or maybe we read articles, but, you know, I think really listening to one another is really where we get to the most important like current elements for us to be addressing. And with that in mind, I also thought it was really cool that you guys are so, you guys are focused in and like really recognize the importance of anti-imperialism. I find like sometimes we can forget about that in some of our organizing spaces, but the fact that you brought up Israel, the fact that you guys, you know, are working with, whether it be like Filipino orgs or Palestinian orgs, you know, these are some like really great things. And I wanted to kind of expand more on that. If you guys could talk more about like, what do you feel like in general, like, because I feel like universities are this really great crossroads of different issues that we really want to get to, you know, whether it be anti-imperialism or anti-capitalism. You know, the solutions that Marxism has for both of those things are really, I think, exceptionally applicable in universities where they have this international, national, you know, local like influence. So I wanted to ask you guys more about like the anti-imperialism stuff. What do you guys feel like, you know, just in general, how do you feel like you feel about anti-imperialism? How do you think students should feel about it? You know, and maybe, you know, talk more about the relationship between the university and their, you know, support of imperialism.
I mean, me generally, and I think this is part of the reason why I became a communist, and more specifically a Marxist-Leninist, is, you know, just my experiences with imperialism, my experiences being in this country, because this is going to sound quite cliche, but I'm the son of immigrants, specifically two immigrants from the highlands of Peru. And I mean, Peru, I know, has its own revolutionary history. It's something that I look towards to a lot in my organizing as well. And I try and bring that in, you know, and share that with my comrades as well. But yeah, I mean, it started early, I'd say, like, because, well, you know, you have, aside from the cities maybe, and even then, like, there's a lot of corruption in the cities, but I started asking, because, you know, in like over there, for the most part, the infrastructure, you know, is subpar at best. You have a lot of people living in poverty, living in conditions that you do not see in the United States at all. And so I started wondering, why are things better off over here than over there back in Peru? And my father in particular, not saying that he was anything of a Marxist, let alone a socialist, but, you know, like, he'd always go on about how great Peru is, how great the land is, the food is, the people are, about all of these things that we have and that we did. And I started to wonder, you know, why aren't we there? And the fact of the matter is, it's that, you know, it's not really us that gets to determine that. At the end of the day, you know, it all comes down to capital, the accumulation of capital, and you know, and through that, you know, history has fostered, you know, this imperialist stage of history that we are currently in. And so it's important to recognize that also, because a lot of so-called Marxists fall into this very reductionist analysis where, you know, other than like only prioritizing class in their struggle, they also end up only looking at specifically American conditions. And when they do, they often end up reducing those conditions to like a very suburban America, when in fact there are various oppressed nations, you know, in the United States itself. And, you know, and when people say, oh, there's no revolutionary potential in the United States, that's far from true as all. I'm not talking about necessarily the white proletariat, so to speak, but, you know, the indigenous nations, you know, the new Africans, so to speak, as well, not just in the South, but, you know, in other parts of the country. You know, the Puerto Rican diaspora as well in the United States, you know, the Hawaii, there are so many, you know, nations within this so-called country. And it's important to realize that, you know, it all comes down to imperialism, to this, you know, this sort of hegemony per se. As for how things are on campus, why people should be anti-imperialist at Rutgers, I believe there is a sentiment there. I mean, aside from the fact that a lot of the people who go to Rutgers are first-generation students, children of immigrants themselves, often from, you know, these, from the global South, from the imperial periphery, there is that sentiment as well, because we do have that military presence on campus. There, we have ROTC programs at Rutgers. They like pay for your tuition and everything. And they even have two buildings on our campus. They have one for their Army division and then one for their Air Force. And from time to time, you can even see them, you know, training across the various campuses in New Brunswick. So obviously that's not very popular with a lot of students, both now and historically speaking. I mean, in the 60s as well, I forget what year exactly, but in the height of, you know, the Vietnam War and all the anti-war protests, I believe the buildings, correct me if I'm wrong, but the buildings, the ROTC buildings were burnt down.
They were occupied. And then when Nixon announced, you know, publicly that we were going to be invading Cambodia, they actually Molotov cocktailed the ROTC office.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was referring to. Thank you for clarifying, Luke. But yeah, so definitely, you know, like students are conscious in that sense. They are generally anti-military, but you know, we do often fall into that trap where, you know, where we become so isolated and so American in our analysis of the world, so to speak, that we only, you know, view ourselves, and we end up, you know, putting down other people's, or often antagonizing, you know, the people that we shouldn't be antagonizing at all. So in regards to anti-imperialist organizing, because I feel like I'm going in circles at this point, I mean, yeah, we do work with Palestinian orgs, Filipino orgs. In the future as well, we do plan on working with other diasporic orgs that might not necessarily have that consciousness yet, so to speak. I mean, the thing of that, obviously, and, you know, I know you're particularly familiar with this, you know, being in Florida, you know, diasporas aren't often very revolutionary. If everything, especially the diasporas here in the United States, they are quite reactionary. I mean, I myself, a lot of the Peruvian diaspora in New Jersey, because New Jersey, I believe, has the second most Peruvian immigrants behind Florida, funnily enough. But yeah, a lot of them are very reactionary, very pro-Fujimori, very neoliberal. And if not that, like, they're just like straight up, you know, like they're basically Catholic monarchists. So yeah, it's so we have to be careful in that regard as well. And we don't want to tail other groups when we are, you know, organizing around anti-imperialism. But it is definitely a noble cause for sure. And, you know, I am optimistic, you know, in the student body at Rutgers. I know there is that potential and there is that consciousness to write off, you know, Rutgers students immediately, just because a lot of us might be petite bourgeois in nature, doesn't mean, you know, that, you know, we can undergo that sort of education and that unlearning of, you know, the liberalism, you know, that has been pushed down our throats for years.
Yeah, I think anti-imperialism is simply just necessary. I don't think you can really be a communist or a revolutionary person or org if you don't take a stance on that, because we directly profit off of it, whether we like it or not, you know, in an imperial power like the US. In terms of anti-imperialism, you know, I'll go back to history, like we've had a long, you know, a struggle on campus, across campuses, on Rutgers and Princeton as well. Like, you know, and especially with the Vietnam War, I feel like that's probably where the student movement was most radical, and I think we can, you know, learn a lot from it. I mean, you know, again, when Nixon decided to invade Cambodia, you know, Molotov cocktails were thrown, you know, into the ROTC building. In Newark, 69, the Black Student Organization took occupied, I think it was Conklin Hall, and they renamed it Liberation Hall. And their occupation of it literally led to, forget what the exact thing is called, but it's basically like it's the program that Rutgers sponsors that basically, you know, aids marginalized populations, you know, specifically Black and Brown populations, and, you know, paying tuition, easing up costs and like that. And of course, you know, that's a reform, but like we still have to recognize the revolutionary elements of that action, and it did achieve you know, something. In, you know, the 80s and the 90s, the anti-apartheid movement for South Africa was very large, and that can, you know, also, we can also learn a lot from that in terms of our struggle against, you know, Israeli apartheid. We had, you know, students literally like holding up signs, like saying like death to supporters of, you know, African apartheid. We had Jesse Jackson, you know, come and give a speech, you know, to a crowd of, you know, maybe 1,000 in Princeton. They took over, they did an occupation as well. And all these things directly led, you know, to divestment from these, to imperialism. And yeah, I don't know, I guess just like, I guess I'll end it with the, you know, the basic Lenin stance of imperialism is the highest stage of capitalism. So it's like, if you can't go against that, like, what are you doing as a socialist? You're only really promoting, you know, white socialism, national Chauvinism, white supremacy, all that kind of thing.
Just one last quick thing, because I mean, Rutgers does have, you know, a lot of history around anti-imperialist organizing, something that happened more recently. Former members of AMLU were even involved in this, which I find a bit crazy. I only found out about this recently, but so this was, I think, 2014, spring of 2014. We were supposed to have Condoleezza Rice, if that's how you say her name, you know, have speak at commencement. And I mean, the decision was quite unpopular because, well, obviously, you know, of her involvement, you know, in kind of peddling the narrative of, you know, of the intervention, just straight up invasion of Iraq and all of the aftermath and the death and suffering that came from that. So, yeah, no, the, like, if I'm not mistaken, the students, I don't know what organization this was. I don't think this was the All Marxist Leninist Union, because at that time we weren't an org yet per se, but yeah, there were a bunch of other student groups, Muslim groups, that I'm sure of, yeah, that occupied like the offices of the Rutgers president at the time, Robert Barchi. And they were in there for a good few hours. I think 6 to 8 hours they were in there, you know, and, you know, eventually, you know, they got Rice to not do her thing at Rutgers. So we do have that history of militant anti-imperialist organizing. I think now, you know, with COVID and everything, it's a matter of regrouping and, you know, and actually building ourselves up as a political force to, you know, to not just replicate those successes, but to achieve new successes of our own.
I think you guys made some really great points about like imperialism and kind of the relationship, you know, with the university. I mean, definitely. So it's really cool to hear this long history of Rutgers in anti-imperialism. I know for FIU, like we're a much younger school, so we don't quite have that. So, you know, hearing about anti-war specifically, which is something that we're still dealing with now, just like how, you know, Oscar, you said, you talked about the Condoleezza Rice, like, you know, protesting her. There, this anti-war movement, you know, it's still so prominent for us today. It's something that we can really learn from the past and bring it into the future. And, you know, especially because of that, you know, international character of a lot of universities, or, you know, like immigrant character or diasporic character of a lot of universities. It's funny you talk about Peru, because, you know, here in South Florida, it's, you know, very, very similar. Like, I remember friends who were going to vote in the elections, what was it, last year or the year before? And it was just like Fujimori people all, it was outstanding how many people were there in support of Fujimori. And like, you know, with signs and all this stuff. I don't think they were technically allowed to have signs like actually in the voting facility, but like just around the area. Because, you know, there was like the Peruvian diaspora is so, I think like the US voted like 94% in favor of Fujimori. So, you know, it's a very like specific type of community. And, you know, that's something that's true for a lot of different diasporic communities, who, you know, I think that material change from going from the third world to the first, you know, it changes, or maybe there's only certain types of people that go through, but, you know, there's definitely, you know, an interesting like relationship with that. So I wanted to kind of, you know, start wrapping up with saying, we've talked a lot about the past, but I would love to hear about, what do you guys think for like AMLU's future? Like, what are you guys trying to organize? What would you really like to see, you know, develop? Like, you know, some of the real things that you guys want to get done. And also, like, you know, where can people find you? What kind of work have you done? And, you know, that just kind of like that general thing, you know, we're starting the year fresh. So I want to hear about all the future stuff.
Let's see, well, there's certainly a lot, not just for the upcoming spring semester, but I think for the fall semester as well. I mean, you do have the faculty strike, you know, very imminent. Looming, you know, if it does happen, and we're all expecting it to happen, of course, but if it does happen, we want to do everything that we can, not just to support the union, but to actually, you know, ensure that there is some kind of change going through. Luke mentioned, you know, all the stuff that happened at the UCs. I think it's also worth to note what happened at the new school. I had the privilege of attending one of their pickets. I think, it was early on though. So like, I didn't get to see the occupation and stuff, but yeah, the students of the new school in solidarity with the union and their demands, they occupied the buildings and everything. And if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but last time I checked, they were still under occupation despite the university accepting the demands, because they want the university to actually, you know, to go through with them and ensure that you know, that faculty get what they need. So, and of course, as I mentioned before, we've had histories of occupation. This is the school of Tent State as well. We've had multiple Tent States. Just for some context, so Tent State, from my understanding, I'm still learning a lot about it and what it was, what it is, and what it could be. But from my understanding, Tent State is, I mean, it's just pretty much that. It's this like huge sit-in movement that started at Rutgers, and it's very educational in nature, and the whole point of it is to like to disrupt like the functioning of the university until like the people organizing the Tent State get what they want. That might be a bit of an oversimplification, but that's how I understand it. But yeah, we've had several of those throughout the years, and so we want to do our part, not just as students, but also as Marxists, as communists, to, you know, to really ensure that, you know, that when the people who you know, who are in power, they don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. And also, you know, to show them that, you know, we truly are a powerful force on campus. And when I say we, I don't just mean our organization, but the masses at Rutgers, really, because at the end of the day, you know, it's the masses, it's the workers who make the university and the community what it is. And it's sad, you know, really, that the a lot of these people that are, you know, that are in charge of the university and even the city proper of New Brunswick aren't even in the city half of the time, and they're just kind of doing their thing at Rutgers, at New Brunswick, as a side hustle almost. I mean, the mayor of New Brunswick, he's been mayor for 31 years. He just recently won re-election as well, which is the crazy thing. But he's not even in New Brunswick half the time. And like it says on his website already that the mayor position for him is just a part-time thing, which I find crazy. But but yeah, definitely a lot of organizing with the strike. I think also in the future as well, something to consider. A very fresh idea, I feel, at least, you know, within the space. But definitely organizing some kind of panel around the USSR, because there are a lot, not a lot, but there is a notable you know, historian of US socialism and the USSR at our university, Norman Markowitz. And I know he has a lot of connections with you know, with actual Soviet historians and people, you know, who have studied the Soviet Union as well. And we also have alumni as well. So, you know, the founder of AMLU, he's very knowledgeable in that regard as well. So definitely some kind of panel that would be great to organize. And I think eventually, whether it's our generation or the next, at some point we should make some kind of effort to go to Cuba and, you know, to actually get a sense of, you know, of what other people around existing. The world are trying to do. Yeah, exactly.
occupation works. It disrupts the university, it prevents scabs. Adding a little more context to the New School strike, they literally, in trying to union bust, they threatened, and they did, they threatened to get rid of the workers' health insurance, because, you know, of course, in the United States, all of our health insurance and stuff like that is tied to employment. So they threatened to do that, and then they literally tried to back it up by putting a bell hooks quote, like justifying their actions, which is insane. And two, going back to like UC Davis, Cops Off for Campus, and all of those organizations who did work in tandem with the union, but I think we have to recognize that the union, unfortunately, is probably not going to be as radical. Outside of the union, they were liberating dining halls. And of course, you know, we do need a lot to work on in terms of building solidarity with, you know, dining hall workers and building those connections. You can't just like walk in and say like, hey, like just start giving free food. You know what I mean? Like you have to talk with these people, work with these people one-on-one to build that kind of relationship and trust. But they literally like liberated these dining halls multiple times, giving out free food and all of that, which is honestly like amazing, especially in a school at Rutgers where the university literally admits that like 1 in 5, you know, have insecurity with, you know, food insecurity, and to where we have this program to where it's like, oh, you can like donate your meal swipes at the end of the university. It's not like we're going to give you food. We're just going to throw that responsibility onto other students, you know, who are working all these jobs and paying all this money. I would definitely love, you know, I feel like that would be amazing to do an occupation, whether it be in the dining halls or just generally, because they work.
Yeah, I would just say more, just broadly speaking here, just embedding ourselves in the struggles of, you know, the university, of the local struggles around New Brunswick, or, you know, even if obviously probably the listeners are not in New Brunswick, but just embedding yourself in the local struggle, like around your community and within the university, is really important, because like Oscar said, it is kind of like a bubble when we're inside the university, and when we step out, it's radically different. So not only just like connecting these two communities that are so separate, but, you know, putting ourselves at their disposal, hearing their, you know, what their conditions are like, and, you know, struggling alongside them to build solidarity and community there. And yeah, that's all I really had to say.
Well, this is really awesome, guys. So I just wanted to say thank you so much. Do you guys want to just like quickly, like maybe like plug your Instagrams or anything like that? That'd be cool. And then I know then we'll be good.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to keep updated with what we're doing, our Instagram is Scarlet Revs, no spaces, no underscores, no periods in between. Scarletrevs. And I'm pretty sure that information will be provided somewhere here as well. And then our Twitter is Scarlet Rev AMLU. And yeah, for the upcoming semester, we'll be sure to post more stuff as well. I mean, we'll have a media committee, and also, we'll just be putting like, you know, obviously what we're doing, but also like just generally like more art as well, because that's also important, not just, you know, as a means of growing our presence, but for education as well.
Awesome. Well, this was a great conversation. I hope everyone has a great day, and hopefully we can keep working on in the future. Lamentablemente, las condiciones que estamos viviendo han llegado a ser una miseria insoportable para la gente. Pero hay unos vendepatrias ingreídos que todavía creen en una sociedad de antes donde los artistas fuimos bestias de trabajo para la industria. Ese sueño se ha acabado y ahora nos encontramos despiertos en la hora de revolución, porque no podemos llamar esto un movimiento si todas las